prepare for Fanfare Racing's NASCAR race review with Hot Topic Sound Off. And tonight we were reviewing the races at Texas Motor Speedway and Southern National Motorsports Park. We're going to start with the review of the ARCA East race at Southern National, and we'll have about 15 minutes for each of our reviews tonight, because we're going to have a one-hour Hot Topic Sound Off tonight starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So after we review the ARCA East race, we'll get into the Truck Series race at Texas, the Xfinity Series race at Texas, and then, of course, the NASCAR Cup Series races at Texas Motor Speedway. Again, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we will have our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fanfare Racing crew right here on Fanfare Racing Radio. So definitely looking forward to all of our conversations here tonight. And we'll get started. Sal should be joining me here in a few minutes, or hopefully soon. But we'll go ahead and get started with the ARCA East race at Southern National Motorsports Park. Sammy Smith dominated that race Saturday night. And on Saturday night, only 17 years old. He didn't always have the best car, but it was the best car during the latter part of the race, and that allowed him to win in that event. I have to keep checking back here for Sal in case he shows up. Okay. They made an adjustment on the number 18 Joe Gibbs Racing machine during the second of two scheduled race breaks, and that fix was just what they needed in order for him to score a victory in the fifth ARCA Menards Series race of the season. So we're into the second half of the ARCA East schedule right now. Sammy Smith took the lead from Mason Diaz shortly after the break and led the last 68 laps for that win. Smith entered the race this weekend with a 22-point lead in the East Series standings, extending his championship points lead to 30 points with his third victory of the season. Sal is here now, so I'm going to bring him into the queue and say welcome. Sal, it's good to have you back.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. It's good to be back.
Absolutely. We're going to take about 15 minutes for each preview tonight, and I was just getting started with the ARCA East. I'll tell you what, Sammy Smith in that number 18 Joe Gibbs Racing car came home with another victory. It's been a strong car this season. With that win, Joe Gibbs Racing now has four consecutive wins in the East Series, including the wins with Ty Gibbs. The team has also won the last seven races they've entered across all of the ARCA Menards Series platform. So that was pretty cool. But, Sal, you've got to be happy that Joey East was fastest in practice and finished second in that race.
Yeah, you know, he's a really good kid. He's like we had talked about before. You know, he's from out here on the West Coast, and you know, to see him, you know, go there and compete and to have the results he's having, because he really wasn't like what you would call, you know, a breakout driver. You know, as he was coming up through the ranks, you know, he was good, you know, and he was being taught well, but you know, to see him, you know, actually have the season he's having, you know. You know, it's really a neat, you know, something neat to see.
Yeah, it is. He's third in the series points right now, but him and Smith were the only drivers who finished on the lead lap in that race. So, let's see, a testament. East was the only other driver who finished in the lead lap. Yeah, Smith passed the cars running third through fifth with roughly 10 laps to go. So So Raja Karuth, the rookie competing in the EAT Series this year as part of the NASCAR's Drive for Diversity program, also set a new record high at Southern National. He finished third, moving himself up one spot to sixth in the championship point. So that was pretty cool to see for Rev Racing as well.
Yeah, it is. I'm still having my – I'm at a hotel still. I'm in San Francisco, so I'm having internet issues. But slowly but surely, everything's coming together. Yeah,
okay.
There I go. I'm getting to the race results. There we go. Oh, yeah, Raja Karuth. So you know, and it's kind of neat to see that you have three rookies also, and you know, finishing the top three. You know, as far as you know the, you know, as far as the, you know, as far as the as far as the race itself went, you know, to see three rookies finish, you know, when you got some good seasoned rookies in there, you know, that's always a, you know, a good testament, you know, as to how the series has come along and how, you know, how much these younger drivers, you know, are really taking advantage of it.
Exactly. Parker Rutzlaff finished fourth, just ahead of Justin S. Terrell in fifth. It was then Daniel Dye, Mason Diaz, Mason Mingus, Davey Callahan, and Max Gutierrez rounding out the top ten. So for Diaz, Mason Diaz, it was his home track for him. He qualified on the pole and led him almost all of the first 130 laps of the race before Smith took over. So Diaz struggled from that point forward and slowly slipped to a final finish of seventh place. So he's second in the East Series points.
Okay. So I'm back at, I don't know why this thing wanted to,
Oh, did it bounce on you?
Weird. Yeah, it's funny. I don't know. It's due to weird things. But, okay, here we go.
Okay,
before we
move on, because we will get into the standings here, but the next event, Saturday night actually was the last standalone event for the ARCA East. They'll be returning back to action on July 4th at Iowa Speedway, but it's a combination race with the ARCA Menard Series. So, and all of their races from here on out are going to be combination events. The Iowa race will broadcast live on MAP TV, Motorsports Network, with live streaming available on NBC Sports Gold Track Pass. The replay of Saturday's night's race, the Southern National 200, will be on NBC Sports Network on Thursday, June the 17th, starting at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. But I always advise people, check your local listings, because a lot of times that can change. So, Sal, do you have the ARCA Menard Series East standings up?
Yeah, I had them. Oh, yeah, here they are, right here. Okay, so... after five races, leading the points is like you said earlier, is still Sammy Smith with five races in, three wins, five top fives, five top tens, and one pole. Oh, man. Amazing. He's led 396 of 912 laps. There's no other driver that's even close to that.
I know. They have a great year.
Yeah, the second is Mason Diaz with zero wins, but he has three top fives to go with his five race wins. Joey East, five top tens, four top fives, and five races. That's probably why he's so high up there in the point stand. He's only 34 behind Sammy Smith. And then fourth is Max Gutierrez, who we know won a race earlier this season. I think we talked about that. And then Daniel Dye rounds out the top five in the point standings. And then from there we go to Parker Rutzlaff, sixth. Raja Karuth is seventh. Dick Doheny is eighth. Stephanie Moyer is ninth. And Carson Koppel is tenth. And out of all the drivers, actually we've had seven drivers so far who have completed all five of the races. And then the others.
Correct.
The other three are... it looks like they might be part-time drivers.
Exactly. So But Sammy Smith has been dominant to the point that you made, leading 396 laps of 912, five top fives, three wins, and five top tens. So he really has been dominant this year. And he's going to be tough to beat, but Mason Diaz is giving it everything he can. We had him on the show, and he just said those Joe Gibbs Racing cars are tough to beat. And they are. You know, when you think about what Ty Gibbs has done and what Sammy Smith is doing, it's tough for these guys to compete up against those cars.
Not only that, but then let's not forget that Sammy Smith is also driving for Donnie Wilson Racing in a super late model. They just competed last weekend they just competed over at last week of the weekend before over at Five Flag Speedway for the Blizzard Series. So it was a two part race. They raced Saturday and then they raced again on Sunday night.
Okay, so that's pretty cool. It is good to know
that some of these guys
are able to get in other races besides what they're doing in the ARCA Series.
He ended up winning the race, but then he got DQ'd in post-race tech because of a carburetor issue.
Okay. Real quick, I want to make sure, before we go to the truck series, I want to make sure I let everybody know when the next races are in the ARCA Menards. For the general, the bigger series, the ARCA Menards series, the general tire anywhere as possible 200 is June the 25th at 6 p.m. Eastern time at Pocono Raceway. The next is the ARCA ARCA West will be racing the NACA Auto Parts 150 July 3rd at 7 p.m. Pacific. That's going to be 10 o'clock Eastern at Irwindale Speedway. So that's going to be pretty cool. I forgot to mention that race at Pocono will be on FS1. The race at Irwindale will be on NBC Sports Gold Track Pass. The next Menards Suit Chief Showdown, the Menards 250, will be on July 10th, 9 p.m. Central, 10 o'clock Eastern, at Elko Speedway, and that race will be televised on MAV TV. And as we mentioned earlier, the ARCA East is racing July the 24th, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern at Iowa Speedway. That's a combination event with the ARCA Menards Series, and that, too, will be televised on MAV TV. So a lot of racing still ahead here for the ARCA Menards Series.
No, yes, there is, and you know it's gonna be another good finish. I mean, so far they haven't disappointed. So we'll see how the season ends for our top three, top five drivers right now.
Yeah, well, for the ARCA East, there's only three more events for them. So, and those are spread out between now and October. So. Three or more events coming up for that ARCA East race series for them to determine who the champion is going to be. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Camping World Truck Series. They race Saturday, June the 12th at Texas Motor Speedway. And again, it was John Hunter Nemechek winning the SpeedyCash.com 220 at Texas Motor Speedway on Saturday. The win was his first at Texas, his fourth of the season, and the 10th win of his career. Chase Elliott was second, followed by Ross Chastain, Grant Infinger, Austin Hill, Chandler Smith, Zane Smith, Todd Gilliland, Tyler Ingram, and Tanner Gray. The pole sitter, John Hunter Nemechek, won the first and second stage. I'm sorry, second stage was actually won by Zane Smith. There were 15 lead changes among seven drivers and seven cautions for 38 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race, this can't be right. It says the average speed of the race was 14.761 miles per hour. I think that is a typo there. Okay, we talked about John Hunter Nemechek for Chase Elliott, who finished second. He posted his first top 10 finish in two races at Texas, and it was his first top 10 finish in 2021. This is in the Truck Series. So Ross Chastain finished third, posting his fourth top 10 finish in 10 races at Texas. Chandler Smith, sixth, was the highest finishing rookie. And we'll talk about it in a few minutes here as it relates to the point standing. So any thoughts there about our top 10?
Yeah, it was I'll tell you, it was after watching the drivers get out of the trucks, you know, talk about the heat, you know, that they had this past weekend in Texas, you know, you kind of almost had to feel bad for them. But John Hunter Nemechek just continues to impress, you know, in that Kyle Busch Motorsports truck. Gosh, he's going to be tough to beat come the end of the season. It was good to see you know, Chase Elliott, you know, get in a truck, you know, and do the one off. And I think the reason Chase said he did the one off was just to try and get a little bit more handle on the track, you know, for the All-Star race, which was run on Sunday. But you know, when you look up and down the finishing order, you know what, it's just not really one driver, you know, who's taking the series by storm besides John Hunter Nemechek, because now you had Grant Enfinger up there, Austin Hill, you know, then like you mentioned, you know, Zane Smith won at stage and finished sixth.
Yep, and it should be noted, too, that John Hunter Nemechek is actually going to join Joe Gibbs Racing's Xfinity Series lineup for three races this year. That was announced last week. So Nemechek is making his JGR debut at Bristol Motor Speedway. That's September the 17th. And then he'll also be racing at Texas Motor Speedway on October the 16th and Phoenix Raceway on November the 6th. So really nice to see that John Hunter Nemechek is getting that opportunity with Joe Gibbs Racing in the Xfinity Series as well.
Yeah, that is so true. You know what? You know, it's going to be an exciting time when it comes to the playoffs. You know, and to see if these drivers, you know, can continue to still perform.
I know it's hard to maintain that kind of momentum for an entire season, but I don't know. He seems to be pretty strong. Let's go over the points report for the Camping World Truck Series, Sal.
The points are, first is John Hunter Nemechek. He's got four race wins, 11 starts, and an amazing, amazing 28 playoff points when it comes time for the chase. Second is Ben Rhodes.
Nobody close to him.
He's just light years ahead. I mean, they might as well just put him in the final four. Third is Austin Hill. Fourth is Todd Gilliland. And run out the top five is Zane Smith. It's good to see Todd Gilliland up there, up in the top five, you know, after
he finally
a couple
got
of
that win.
Then just watching him the last couple seasons, you know, just, you know, kind of struggling to find his groove. But, mm-hmm. you know, little by little, you know, Todd started to come around.
I give him a lot of credit, though, for hanging tough in the Camping World Truck Series instead of trying to push forward to Xfinity. I think he did the right thing by sticking it out with the Truck Series.
And his dad, David, you know, David, I know he's the biggest influence. And David knows what it takes to run, you know, trucks, Xfinity, and Cup. And David has seen it firsthand. You don't really want to push somebody, you know, into it. You know, I mean, they're still young. They still have a lot of racing left. You know what? Let them mm-hmm. get as much as they can out of these lower series, you know, before they start pushing, you know, up into the next, you know, next level. And, you know, and David's a really good scout when it comes to, you know, so everybody knows, you know, his own race team, but he's also, you know, a really good scout, you know, at at bringing up these up and coming drivers, you know, like he's running the developmental program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's got, and actually Todd isn't really a DGR driver. He is per se, you know, because you know that the trucks are prepped by David, but you know he's, Todd's running with a different team because
mm-hmm.
the other driver is Tanner Gray and Haley Deegan are two of the regulars with David Gillen and Racing. And then of course David has the one truck that he rents out, you know, for different drivers who want to come in. But
mm-hmm.
anyway, so back to the points. So now we've got Sheldon Creed in sixth, Grant Enfinger seventh, Matt Kraft in eighth, Stuart Fries in ninth, and Carson Hosovar is on the bubble with Chandler Smith 47 points behind Carson Hosovar as Chandler Smith.
Yeah, again, I just think that this is going to bounce around before it's all said and done. They had five races left. I think they're down to four races left in the regular season for the Camping World Truck Series. So, you know, this is getting real for these guys as far as whether or not they're going to make it into the playoffs. And some of these guys that are below the cut line, I've been saying it all season long, some of these guys could potentially come up with a victory before this is said and done and put themselves on top of that cut line with a win.
Yeah, that is true. You know, you never know. You look at Johnny Sauter. Tyler Anker too as a possibility. I don't know. Tyler just really hasn't found his knack the last year and a half. He's been kind of struggling in trucks too. You know, of course, you know, we'd like to see Austin Wayne Self get up and, you know, get a win. Tanner Gray.
Mm-hmm.
You look up and down Timothy Peters, you know, even though he's not running full time. And other than that, you know, the only one you really look at, it's funny because they don't even have Kyle Busch on the, even though he's not running for points. So I was curious how many truck wins he has this year.
Yeah, he had some wins along with my whole screen just went down. He had some wins along with John Hunter Nemechek. So I'm going to have to kind of reboot here.
Yeah, because they were going back and forth. You know, as far as their
what do you mean they're going back?
You know, race wins, yeah.
Yeah, they were. They were going back and forth with race wins. Yeah. And so there for a while, it's hard for anybody else to win. Again, Kyle Busch Motorsports, which is the feeder series into Joe Gibbs Racing, those cars have been very, very strong this year. So same as what we were just talking about in the Arkham Menards series, how the Joe Gibbs Racing cars are tough to beat. Same thing in the truck series. Okay. Let's see if there's any news here in the truck series that we want to make sure that we bring up. I mentioned about John Hunter Nemechek racing in the Xfinity series. Okay, Lawless Allen adds to schedule with Rayum Brothers in racing. Rayum Brothers announced that Lawless Allen will run five more races with the team this season. He'll race at Nashville, Pocono, Watkins Glen, Bristol, and Talladega. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm curious how this deal came I missed her. If I went to Irwindale on Saturday, Lawless was racing his late model over there, but I'm stuck out here in Frisco. I was going to ask him how the deal came about. I was done, but I should give him a call and ask him how, maybe get him on to talk about the,
yeah,
you know, what he's got going on this, you know, this season, you know, as far as with the, well, we know, you know, he's got five more races with the trucks, you know what, and it's good to put him at Watkins Glen because he spent most of last year racing the Trans Am series, you know, so he has the, he's got the road racing experience, you know, so putting him in a truck, you know, on a road course, you know, was a good, you know, it's going to be good for this team, you know, and see how Lawless comes, you know, comes out of that.
Okay. The other news here is Jack Wood. He's going to finish out the season for GMS Racing. He previously raced at the Circuit of the Americas, where he made his debut, and his Charlotte Motor Speedway, his best finish between the two races, was a 15th place finish at Charlotte. He's going to be in the number 24. He was in the number, Chase Elliott scheduled to compete in the 24 at Texas, but Jack Wood will finish off the season in that car for the remainder of the year. So that was good news as well.
Yeah, Jack is, he kind of disappeared for a couple seasons out here. We didn't hear nothing of him. And then all of a sudden this year he popped up and it seems like he's racing everything he can get his hands on.
Well, that's the way to do it. He's getting his name out there and that's a really good thing.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series. They will also race at Texas Motor Speedway on Saturday. Their race started at 4 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, Kyle Busch is knocking on the door of 100 wins. He had his 99th victory in the Xfinity Series on Saturday in the Alsco Uniforms 250 at Texas Motor Speedway. In overtime, the number 54 of Kyle Busch won at Texas Motor Speedway, marking his second win in as many attempts this season and his 10th checkered flag at Texas. He adds on to his all-time series total win, picking up his 99th victory in 359 starts after leading 23 laps earlier in the race. Justin Allgaier finished second, Austin Cindric third, Daniel Hemric finished in fourth place, followed by Brandon Jones to round out the top five. Then it was A.J. Allmendinger, Noah Gragson, Brett Moffitt, Justin Haley, and Michael Lynette rounding out the top 10. Cindric won the opening stage, his sixth stage victory of the season. Busch was victorious in the second stage and, of course, the third stage. There were 13 lead changes among eight drivers and 10 cautions for 54 yellow flag caution laps. The average speed of the race was 107.773 miles per hour. This is the 10th victory and 18th top 10 finish in 24 races at Texas Motor Speedway for Kyle Busch. Justin Allgaier posted his 11th top 10 finish in second place in 23 races at Texas, and his 7th top 10 finish this year. Cindric posting his 6th top 10 finish in 8 races at Texas. That's pretty impressive. Jade Buford, who finished 16th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race, and that's pretty much the stats there for the Xfinity Series at Texas. Your thoughts there? So.
Yeah, it was Allgaier was fast. I really thought he had Kyle Busch, and then Kyle Busch came back. But on that last restart, you know, I don't know. I know some people seen it my way and some seen it another way, but when you have your teammate behind you, you know what? Push your driver. Don't lay back and let him leave him hanging out to dry because you're not going to win. He's not going to win. Noah Gregson was right behind Justin, and he could have given him a really good push and pushed him right past Kyle. Instead, I don't know. Somebody said he spun his tires. I didn't see him spin his tires. I just never seen him just launch and really give Allgaier the push he needed for whatever reason. I know him and Allgaier have gone back and forth on the track as being teammates, you know, where, mm-hmm. you know, Noah has wrecked him a couple of times, and maybe Noah just didn't want to push him or because he wasn't going to win whatever. But, I mean, karma bit Noah because he finished seventh, and he still doesn't have a win.
Unfortunately,
you know,
it doesn't seem like Noah's made a lot of friends on the track, that's for sure.
And especially with that, you know, I read Twitter, you know, and I read a lot of people, you know, were talking about that. They said, you know, Noah, and it was on his own Twitter page, you know, someone said, yeah, maybe if you'd have pushed your teammate, you know, of course, he's not going to respond. Because if he responds, mm-hmm. he's going to say, well, you know, I spun my tires or something else. But, you know, I just couldn't.
Well, yeah, it happens. You know, there's any number of things that could have happened that caused that to be the case. But I know a lot of people were looking for him to be supported there. But they also know that there's no love lost there as well. Any other thoughts here about this group? I keep saying that Daniel Hemric is knocking on that door. He's got to come up with a win here sooner or later.
Oh, he has to. He's been strong. You know, he's having good finishes. You know, it looks like they're giving him a car to win. He just can't. I don't know. He's like Mark Martin trying to win that championship in the Cup Series. You know, he just could never close a deal. And it seems like that's where Daniel Hemric is sitting right now. You know, he just can't, for some reason, he just can't close a deal and get that win. Hopefully he gets a win before the end of the season. It'll be huge for him. You know, they're talking about, you know, some drivers are just meant, you know, to be in certain series, you know, and you know, somebody mentioned Allgaier, you know, just staying in Xfinity his whole career. Well, then you look at like Ron Hornaday Jr., who just ran trucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, he dabbled in Cup and Xfinity, but his cream of the crop was running the truck series. So
I think Justin Allgaier coming to the Xfinity series was a good move.
Yeah, it was a really good move for him. He's really been impressive, and he's been strong, just like AJ Allmendinger. Allmendinger is another one that's been showing, you know, a lot of promise, you know, a lot of promise in the series.
Yeah, and it's been fun watching both of those guys race in that series. So I think the series was the benefactor of both of those guys coming into it and kind of sticking it out there. I'm real happy for them. Let's go ahead and hit the point standings here.
Okay, driver points. We're still looking at Austin Cindric, who's leading the points. He's got three race wins. They have 21 playoff points going into the playoffs when they start. Second is AJ Allmendinger, who's got two race wins and 13 playoff points. Third is hanging in there, and third is Daniel Hemric, which still no wins, but having a very consistent season, and that's what's keeping them up in that third spot to where you can, when it comes time when they start locking drivers in, it looks like Daniel will be one of them that will be locked in. And then from there, then we go to Harrison Burton, Justin Allgaier, the top five. And then actually the top six, because we take 12 into the chase. Justin Haney's sixth of them. From there, then we go seventh is Jeb Burton, Brandon Jones, Noah Gregson, Michael Annette, Jeremy Clements, and Brandon Brown round out the top 12, with Brandon Brown being on the bubble.
He's on the top side of that bubble, and I think that's pretty darn cool that he is there. It's going to be close because there's only 8 points between him and Myatt Schneider, who's in that 13th spot. But again, I think there's a lot of drivers down here that could come up with a win. We know Josh Berry has a win. Ty Gibbs has two wins. Ryan Sieg is right now in 17th place, but I've seen him not as much as we saw him last year racing in the top 10, but in the early part of the season, he wasn't so much up there in the top 10. In the second half of the season, we're seeing him there a little bit more frequently. So I think Ryan Sieg is another one of those drivers that could pull off a victory. And Myatt Snyder already has a win. So he's actually in, even though he's 13th in points. And Brandon, that would drop Brandon Jones outside.
Yeah, then if Josh Berry gets enough races, then he'll be the other one that'll him and Ty Gibbs actually will drop.
Yeah, I don't think Ty Gibbs are going to give him a waiver because he's only raced 7 of the 14 races, and I don't think he has any plans of racing other than part time this year, even though he's had the 2 victories.
Yeah, 2 very impressive victories at that.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, and playoff points, Austin Cindric again kind of has the most. He's got those 6. In addition to having 3 race wins, he's got 6 stage wins. The closest to him on that is Daniel Hemric, who has 5 stage wins, but he doesn't have any victories this year. So that makes a huge difference in the playoff points. The 3 wins give Austin Cindric those 21 playoff points and Daniel Hemric just 5 playoff points.
Yeah, those playoff points are going to come in. They're going to come in huge at the end of the season when, you know, if you have a bad race, you know, basically if Michael Annett makes it, or even if Noah Gragson makes it, with those 2 playoff points, that's not really going to help them, especially if Austin Cindric has a bad race and the playoff points are just going to, I mean, that's almost a guaranteed spot right there into the next round.
Mm-hmm. I want to get your thoughts. We talked about this on Hot Topics last week. Some people are kind of saying that maybe it's time for NASCAR to end the whole stage racing thing. Because the breaks are too long when they take the stage breaks and uses a lot of the laps up. What are your thoughts about that? Because along with that, they're saying maybe they can give the stage points without actually stopping the race.
I don't know. It's tough. It's like you're in a catch-2 situation because we've seen to where it has made racing somewhat exciting, and then we've also seen the downside of it. You know, like you said, you know what some of the fans are saying, you know, about the, you know, about what it's taken away from the racing. You know, I would just rather see them get rid of the stage wins, the stages, because in my opinion, I don't like the playoff point situation there. I mean, you win a race, you get the points, and you move on. I've never been a fan of the when they started doing the you know with the playoff points because you know then basically you can almost sandbag your way through the playoffs, you know, like Martin Truex when he had all those playoff points that one year, you know, he really didn't have to go out there and really push for a win or a good finish because he had the stage points, you know, that were going to boost him into the next round. So why even worry about, you know, having a, you know, going out there, you know, at full bore, so to speak.
Okay. Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I like the stage racing. I think it keeps all the drivers engaged throughout the race. We forget why stage racing came into being what it is, and that's because people were sandbagging an entire race. And when you think about it, fans come to the track, they want to see their favorite driver out there racing at the front, if they can race up there at the front. And a lot of these guys were sandbagging and not showing up until the end of the race. So NASCAR instituted the stage racing in order to keep all of the drivers engaged to get those extra points. So, I'm an advocate for the stage racing for that reason. Now, I wish that they could. They didn't have to take so long for the stage breaks. There's got to be a way that they could stop that. And I kind of, I've kind of wavered on this a little bit, but I could see some value to awarding the stage points if they have a way of doing it where they could take the telemetry at where the stage break would normally happen and award the points based on the running order on that lap and continue the race without stopping it. I would rather be in favor of that than just discontinuing it altogether. I still think there's value in having the drivers engaged throughout the race. I hated the sandbagging, and I hated it for the fans because you pay good money to go see those races. Who wants to watch their driver race at the back of the race for three quarters of the race and just show up at the end? That's a waste of some good hard-earned money. In my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? It makes a lot of sense, because, it went both, like you said, it went both ways,
mm-hmm.
But, it's just it was a tough situation, a tough dilemma that NASCAR was in, when they brought up the stage races, and it's like with anything that they bring out new, you're going to have the good and you're going to have the bad.
Sometimes fans forget why we put it into place. And sometimes when you get what you ask for, you decide you don't like that either.
Yeah, so. And it's just, it's just the nature of the beast. And unfortunately, will NASCAR ever find a happy medium? Probably not.
It's hard to please everybody all the time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on to the Cup Series. Let me see if I can get that info here. They raced again at Texas. They had the All-Star Open as well as the All-Star Race. And it was really kind of interesting. The Open, I thought, was a little bit easier to understand what the heck they were doing. The All-Star Race seemed like it was a little convoluted to me. But at the end, Kyle Larson continued his hot streak. Let me see. For the All-Star Open, let's give the fast facts for that first. Eric Almirola won the All-Star Open and will race in the All-Star Race for the fourth time in his career. Ross Chastain won the first round, and that was after he was had to start at the back of the race, at the back of the field after a pre-race inspection failure. So that was pretty impressive. And Tyler Reddick won round two of the All-Star Open, and all three of those drivers were able to race their way into the All-Star Race. Matt DiBenedetto won the fan vote, and he was also able to race in the All-Star Race. So for DiBenedetto, it was the second time in his career. Tyler Reddick, the first time he raced in the All-Star event, as it was for Ross Chastain. And as we mentioned earlier, Eric Almirola raced in the All-Star Race for the fourth time in his career. As far as the All-Star Race itself, Larson held off Keselowski by 0.206 seconds. Elliott was third, followed by his Penske teammates, Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney. Hendrick Motorsports' other two cars, driven by Alex Bowman and William Byron, finished sixth and seventh. Byron's 30 laps out front were the most on the night, and Eric Almirola, Kyle Busch, and his older brother Kurt rounded out the top 10 in the 21-car field. Kyle Larson won the second the All-Star Race. It was his second All-Star Race win. Keselowski finished second, followed by, we mentioned it already, Elliott, Logano, Blaney, Bowman, Byron, Almirola, Bush, and Bush. Larson took the lead with 7 laps remaining to help him off the rest of the way, and the race was broken into 6 rounds. The first 4 rounds were 15 laps each, won by Larson, the 12 of Blaney, the 48 of Bowman, and the 24 of Byron. After the first round, the top 12 finishers were inverted. Following the second round, the entire field was inverted, and at the conclusion of the third round, the top 9 were inverted. Before the fifth round, drivers were lined up based on their average finish in the first 4 rounds. The fifth round was 30 laps and was won by Chase Elliott. The sixth and final round was a 10-lap shootout. Only green flag laps counted during the entire race. Drivers, we mentioned the drivers already that advanced. There were 10 lead changes among 8 drivers and 7 total cautions. The average speed of the race was just 84.919 miles per hour. So some pretty interesting stats there for the All-Star race.
Yeah, I wasn't, I don't know, I watched it. I wasn't really too much of a fan with the format they used this year. I didn't like the 12-car invert, and I didn't like the full invert. You only invert once. You don't invert twice, 3, 4 times in a race because I'm surprised that one of the teams didn't really play to the invert, you know, and, you know, I mean, I don't know. I didn't, there was too many times the invert. Should have just inverted once. And I think the invert should have been at the very beginning of the race.
Seemed a little convoluted to me. And it was good that
it was.
Announcers were explaining it to everybody as they went along because it was hard to kind of keep track of what was going on with each thing. And I guess they did some kind of, during the race, fans were voting on the invert.
Yeah,
how
they
many
had
the invert?
Well, they picked a color, and then they had the invert underneath the color on the stage.
Okay.
Is what they did. So they had like 4 colors, and then the fans would pick one of the colors, and then whatever majority color they picked, then they pick up the thing, and that would be the invert. But, you know, I didn't care for that. The whole format, you know what, the 10-lap shootout, you know what? Come on, these are Cup guys. You know what, give them a 30-lap shootout. Give them something to shoot for. Don't just tell them basically 10 laps. Ain't nothing going to happen in 10 laps. I mean, shoot. You know, understand with the heat and all that. You know what? You know, the heat was a factor. You know, played havoc on the track and havoc on the drivers and the teams. But, you know, I mean, they needed more than that. I didn't like the 10-lap shootout. They needed at least a 30-lap shootout. You know, give the drivers a chance to kind of settle in and, you know, and do some passing. You ain't going to see no passing in 10 laps.
Okay, some more stats here. Kyle Larson won the race, his second All-Star win in 5 races. He also finished in the top 5 3 times. Hendrick Motorsports wins its record-extending 10th All-Star race and 2nd consecutive. Previous wins came in 2020, 13, 12, 6, 3, 1, 1999, 97, and 95. Larson becomes the 8th driver to win the All-Star race more than once. He joins Jimmy Johnson, who has 4, Dale Earnhardt with 3 wins, Jeff Gordon with 3, Davey Allison, Kevin Harvick, Mark Martin, and Terry Labonte with 2. So that's some pretty interesting stats there as well for the All-Star race. So
yeah, those are when you think about it, but they need to come up with the format and just leave it like that instead of every year doing something different because I'm sure 85-90% of the fans, it's a good thing that they explain it because I know they are talking about even some of the drivers weren't understanding too well. They're relying on their on their crew, you know, to tell them, you know, about what, you know, what basically what's going on.
Because
then they had to have that, because then they had that mandatory pit stop, you know, and,
right.
and I guess within 10 laps or 20 laps or something like that. And that's when they did the, that's when they did the pit stop challenge.
Yeah, I just thought the whole thing was confusing. And actually, I found myself kind of being nostalgic for the outside race being in front of the hometown crowd at Charlotte Motor Speedway, as much as this is another example where a lot of us are advocating for the All-Star Race to be in different tracks in different years. And when it first opened up, I kind of felt bad that they weren't at the home track at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Did that feeling come across to you at all?
Yeah, it was different, you know, because, you know, like you said, you know, we're used to seeing it over there, you know, not in Texas, you know, and you know, I know, give Eddie Gossage, you know, a big round of applause, you know, for trying to make it, give it a different, you know, a different feeling while knowing, you know, that, you know, it was going to be the, actually it was his last race, he's got one more cup race at the end of the season and that's it. And then he leaves for, you know, he's retiring, going on other things, but, you know, it just didn't have that same feeling. Yeah, it didn't.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go ahead and cover the points report. Of course, the All-Star Race was not a points-paying event, but we'll just refresh everybody's memory of where the points stand after Sonoma.
Okay, after Sonoma, the point standing is Kyle Larson leading the points now? No, Denny Hamlin still leads. Okay, what I'm looking at is playoff standings after Sonoma.
Yeah.
Huh, I wonder why it's not giving the point standings.
Where are you looking?
At Chasey.
Okay, because you're probably looking at their the playoff standings. You want to look at the points report after Sonoma.
Yeah, that's what I'm.
Yeah, I think you're looking at the playoff standings because Chasey does the playoff standings. And, yeah, they've got playoff standings after Sonoma. So that does show Kyle Larson in the lead. But what you want to do is go down further where it says driver point standings.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get it right now. Okay. Driver point standings in the Cup Series is Denny Hamlin leading the points, Kyle Larson in second, Chase Elliott in third, William Byron in fourth, Joey Logano fifth, Martin Truex Jr. sixth, Kyle Busch seventh, and Ryan Blaney round out the top eight since we take 16 drivers into the playoffs.
And yeah, the thing that's interesting there, Sal, is Kyle Larson, who's in second place, is he has the 11 stage wins. That's amazing. And that's in addition to his 3 race wins. So he has 26 playoff points in total. Closest person to him is the other driver with 3 race wins, and that's Martin Truex Jr., but he only had 3 stage wins, giving him 18 playoff points. So those stage wins can make a big difference.
Oh, yeah. You know what? And, you know, and Come the start of the chase, you know what, and playoffs, so we're going to see that.
Yep.
And then going back down the line, we got Kevin Harvick in 9th, Brad Keselowski in 10th, Alex Bowman 11th, Austin Dillon 12th, Tyler Reddick 13th, Chris Buescher 14th, and Chris Bell round out. Chris Bell 15th, and Michael McDowell round out the top 16.
Yeah, Michael McDowell's hanging on. He's still in that 16th spot. He's above the cut line by 24 points. And he's got the race win, that's right. So he's going to be above the cut line. But even points-wise, he's still in the top 16. So you got to give him credit for that. Matt DiBenedetto, though, is knocking on the door. He's 24 points out. Again, I just think that his driver is below the cut line that could come up with a victory.
Yeah, there's a few of them in there, you know, that could, you know, possibly come up. You know, Kurt Busch is one of them. You know, the way Ross Chastain raced this last weekend at Texas, he's another one. I mean, he was very, very aggressive, you know, to make the, you know, to make it, to get his, to race his way into the All-Star event, you know, and.
And then what about the guys that are still at zero? There's five of drivers. 11 drivers have victories of the 16 drivers. But five of those drivers have zero wins yet for on the season. Some of those drivers could still come up with a victory, too.
Oh, yeah, we haven't even seen Kevin Harvick getting a victory late, or Danny Hamlin. At that, you
had the most wins last year.
Yeah, who basically dominated the whole season, and here he is sitting ninth in points with zero wins and zero playoff points.
It's amazing.
Maybe it's time for Tony to step down and just worry about the SRX and Leah Pruitt. and put someone else in that spot so they can start winning races again.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they're putting a lot of focus, I think, on this next year, 2022. And sometimes when you look ahead, you lose track of where you are. So it is going to be interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's. Basically, it's going to come down to the guys with the most that have the most playoff points are going to be the ones to keep advancing, because the other ones are going to seem like they're going to slowly and slowly. If they don't start getting any points, they're going to slowly but surely weed themselves out of the chase.
Yep. Okay, Sal, we're winding down here. We did a one-hour show tonight for a review show. We're going to have a one-hour Hot Topic segment tonight with Jay and Tommy coming on board here shortly. But I know you're in San Francisco. are you headed home soon?
Finally, after 3 weeks, I'm going home.
Oh,
I'm going home in the morning.
That's awesome.
I'm driving home tomorrow, 7-hour drive. I sleep at home, and then Wednesday evening I have a flight to catch to Seattle for my grandson's graduation on Thursday.
Oh, so you're still jet setting. Well,
so after 3 weeks, I'm only going to see my house for about 12 hours. That's it.
Wow.
Less than that.
Well,
about 12 hours.
Yeah, that's amazing. I hope you have safe travels, Sal. And happy birthday to your grandson.
Graduation.
Oh, graduation. I'm sorry.
Yeah, high school
graduation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Looking forward to it.
Well, I made it through the first half of the show. Without the dogs, B-A-R-K-I-N-G. So hopefully we can make it through this next hour without that as well. But thanks
there
for being here. It's always fun.
All right. You guys have a good weekend. Tomorrow's the 15th. Looks like no more masks after tomorrow. Disneyland made the announcement today that masks are no longer required So we'll see what happens with the rest of the world. I know I was shocked when I heard that. Basically, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. They're going to do the honor system. They're not going to check.
Right, right.
So, we'll see what happens with that. Yeah.
Well, they're saying that for those people that are not vaccinated, though, they're saying that they're might be more at risk than they were when everybody was wearing masks. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Well,
all
good
right,
night, everyone.
Sal,
have a good evening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Okie doke. It's a deal.
Okay.
Take care now.
All right. Okay. Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right. We are at the 9:30 p.m. Eastern time frame. And that means it is time for NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. And joining me for tonight's show are a couple of our Fan for Racing crew members. And we'll start with, Tommy. Tommy Kraft, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's always good to have you on, as well as Jay Huseman, our co-host for Thursday nights. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Tommy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Pretty good.
Okay. Well, Mike told me he wasn't going to be on, so I went. Usually on Monday nights I go to Owen first, and then Owen couldn't make it. And then right after that, Andy posted that he couldn't make it. And Tommy, thank you for saying that you're available tonight because I jumped on that right away to say, yes, we need you. So thank you for being available.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So with that, let's go ahead and start with our hot topics for tonight. Jay, we'll let you go first.
All right. Well, I know I didn't get a chance to put any of them up onto the page there, but I don't know that any of them need the article or attachment. First one I want to start with is Kyle Busch did win his 99th NASCAR Xfinity Series race. He's entered in Nashville next week, and I don't know what else he has left on the schedule for this year, but his statement has been at 100 he was done. So whether or not he holds to that, if he's done after this year, I mean, I know if he hits 100 next week at Nashville, he might race whatever other commitments he made for this year, but then done after that going into next year, if he thinks he holds true to it, and whether or not that is a loss for the Xfinity Series.
Okay, that's a good one. So, Tommy, what are your thoughts?
It would definitely be a loss to the Xfinity Series because he is always a threat every time he is in a truck or an Xfinity car or a cup car or really anything. So I miss it when Brad and Carl and all of them used to race in the Xfinity Series full time. I do like the way it is now, but at the same time, I kind of wish that some of the Cup guys did compete in a little bit more races. I am excited to see that John Hunter Nemechek will be in that 54 car. I bet he probably gets a win in it too. I mean, Ty Gibbs is winning in it. That seems to be the dominant car with the 22 car and the 7 car and all those guys. But Kyle Busch probably wins again at Nashville and gets a Gibson guitar, and maybe he is done, and that will be a huge loss for the Xfinity Series. So maybe is his plan to get 100 across all three series and then retire?
Okay, yeah, I 100% agree with you, Tommy. I think that it will be a huge loss for both the trucks and the Xfinity Series to have Kyle Busch not be able to race. They've limited him, I think, to just 5 races in each of those series. And there for a while, he was taking the first 5 races of the season just to kind of get it out of the way and move on. This year, he's doing it a little bit differently. But I too, miss having some of the Cup Series guys come down and race in the Truck Series and Xfinity Series. We saw Chase Elliott do it this past week. Ross Chastain came and raced in the Truck Series. So that was good to see. But I would like to see it a little more often, too. And I will tell you all of the drivers were talking about it in the Xfinity Series race, how much they enjoy having drivers like Kyle Busch come down into that series and race with them, because they do learn a lot from those drivers when they're racing in that series. I know there's the fans don't always like it, but I think universally most drivers like the idea of having those guys in the series and being able to learn from them. And I remember a lot of drivers telling us, in order to be the best, you've got to be able to beat the best. And one of the biggest joys, I think, for a lot of these drivers is if they can beat Kyle Busch on the track, they feel like they have really accomplished something in their careers. So that's what they strive to do when these guys come down into those series. So it's going to be a huge loss. Now, will he hold true to his statement that after 100 wins he'll stop? We'll have to wait and see. But I do think it would be a huge loss if he does. So, Jay, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
They pretty much align with yours there, Sharon. I know Tommy made some of the points, too. The first one being he did make the statement 100 and he was done. So I feel like he should adhere to that. But I see it like you guys do. It is a loss for the series. It is a loss to those other drivers that say they learn from him and the confidence that gives them, knowing whether they're running right with him or beating him on the track. You know, that's that bar they want to strive for. So it is a loss all the way around. And then I know with NASCAR, or with the sponsorship side of it, for Kyle, he talks about it in the trucks. That's part of what allows him to allow these other drivers the part-time rides or whatever, is he agrees to do X number of races, brings in the sponsorship dollar, and then spreads that across so other drivers get the opportunity. And that's where I think fans get one single-minded. They don't like Kyle. They don't want to see him win or whatever. But there's so much more to it that, than that, that makes the sport go around. And I think NASCAR did a great job. They listened to the fans. They said, okay, you can't run a full season. We cut it down to, what, 10, I think, the first cut they made. Then it was 7. Now it's 5. I think they found that happy medium. I personally think it should be a little higher, but I'm okay with where they're at with it. You know, so I think they did the best they could to try and appease the fans, but also keep the business side viable, you know. And I know Kyle still says five really isn't enough. So, but I think they could tweak on that. And I know obviously the truck series is where he'll put his focus now, even more so, being that if he does hit the 100 in the Xfinity series and stops.
Mhm. Okay, Tommy, your follow up.
I like what Junior said on his show. He said that Mark Martin at Front Row Joe, Joe Nemechek, is what made him better. He said they would come down from the Cup and race in the Xfinity Series and just tear them up. He said, but we learned so much. He was talking about him and Matt Kenseth, because that was like his top competitor in the Busch Series when he was racing, and, you know, rookies together and everything. But, yeah, it would just be a huge loss because he's been – dominating a long time in it. I mean, he's almost got 100 wins, so that just shows. So, but I don't want to see him end it. But like Jay just said, he'll focus on the trucks. So I was thinking he probably wants to get 100 in the trucks and then stop. But maybe he has his eyes on 200 for Richard Petty. But that's just way too far. Maybe David Pearson. Maybe David Pearson. But that's all I got to add to that.
Okay. I agree. Again, I just think that if you talk to the drivers, it's almost universal. They all feel the same way, that they like having the Cup Series drivers come into those series and race. The other point that Jay brought up about, you know, maybe five is not enough. I kind of agree with that. I know Kyle says it really hurts him as far as sponsorship for his teams. If he could race more, he could probably get more sponsorship. So I guess NASCAR has got to kind of weigh that as well. But I agree that maybe 10 was too many. I would say 7 or 6 are probably about right. 6 maybe for the truck series, because they don't run as many races. But I think that 5 is kind of we can live with that. But I would like to see maybe 1 or 2 more races if they could manage that. I think it would be really, really good and healthy for the sport. So I'll just add my 2 cents on that point. Jay, any final thoughts you have there?
Yeah, I got 2 cents too. Actually, I got a nickel, so I might spend a little bit more. But the problem I have with this is that it's not about Cup drivers coming down. It is about Kyle Busch coming down. You didn't hear anybody complaining that Chase Elliott was in the race. You don't hear anybody complaining they sell out more tickets when Dale Jr. is going to drive. I know he's no longer an active Cup driver, but you get my point. It is not about the Cup drivers coming down unless you go back to when they were running full-time with the top organization. And I did understand that, and that's why I said I support NASCAR in cutting them back, even to down to 10. Again, I think that might have been a little many, but I'm not the one that has to say what covers the bills. So if Kyle says he needs at least 7 or 8, then, you know, work with that. But that's where I really feel the issue from the fans is it's not about the Cup drivers. It is about one driver. And I don't like to see that. That's why I feel like Kyle even made the statement that, hey, I'll be done then. And 100 is a huge mark. I mean, I don't even remember what Mark Martin's record is. It's like 51 or 52. He's double that.
Right.
So, you know, and he's not doing that one for his own team anymore. So I think it may open, I'm hoping it will open the opportunity for either a couple of the other Cup drivers. We've seen Martin Truex, Denny Hamlin, possibly Bubba Wallace, or even from the Truck Series, John Hunter Nemechek then, to then step in that ride in spots where they may normally use Kyle. They can use another driver. So hopefully it still works out good, but I wouldn't even – I know if Kyle were to run next year after he goes over 100, you know, you can hear it in your head, the fan lashback. You said you quit, mm-hmm. You aren't now. I understand that's what he said, but it's one of those things of, hey, sometimes things change. I wouldn't hold it all that against him if he were to continue anyway. Because, again, it's, you know, if that's what's financial viable for the team and they got to do it, they got to do it. You know, it's either that or maybe the team goes away. Is that what you want?
Exactly. So, again, be careful what you wish for, because it could hurt you in the long run. Okay, Tommy, you get to bring up the next hot topic.
Let's just go with the All-Star race. Let's just go with thoughts on that and like the rules package and the outcome and everything.
Okay, Jay, I'll let you go first.
I still thought it was a good race. And, again, the open was very intense. We saw that from the get-go, the drop of the green. Somebody was spinning out loose and giving it all they had from lap one. The All-Star race itself, I still thought was a good race. They're in the final 3 to 4 laps. Yeah, Kyle Larson had the car. But Chase Elliott and Joey Logano were right there with him. It wasn't like he blew their doors off and was 10 seconds ahead. So I'm going to let Sharon read Mike's comments. I know it wasn't directly on it, but I think you were in that chat group where him and Andy were talking about it. And I wish he had been here tonight because I wanted to have that discussion with him. I do not see where they want to bulldoze that track. I just don't see it. But I'm still in favor of rotating it to different tracks. And, yes, you may have it where one track works better. You know, they don't have the right package and it doesn't come out as good, but that's how you find out, is to try different things, try new things and see what happens.
Okay, Jay, I'm going to have you read it because I don't know which thread that was on. Was that on the Hot Topics or was that on Race Day Chat?
Yeah, it was a different one. If you want to go and give your thoughts there, I'll try and pull it up while you're doing that.
Okay. I thought it was a little confusing what they were doing during the All-Star race. I had no problem following the open That was fine. But the drawing the colors or the numbers or whatever to figure out what the invert and all that was going to be, I could have done without all that. But you're right. The racing wasn't all that bad. It was just a little confusing. And I thought there were too many rounds. I didn't think there have to be that many rounds. Yeah, there's a 10-lap shootout. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more on the final segment. They're just getting started at 10 laps, so it's already over before they actually get going by that point on a four round. So to me, it was too confusing and I think a little bit too much, but. The racing was exciting, but all of that inverting, I don't know how much it changed. So I don't know that it was all that necessary, to be honest with you. I wasn't a fan of the format. I'll just say that. And I also found myself, I was mentioning this to Sal earlier, that when they were doing the introductions and everything, I was almost a little nostalgic for it not being in front of their hometown crowd for the All-Star Race when their family and friends could be there for all the hoopla of the All-Star Race. So I have to admit, I was a little nostalgic that it wasn't at Charlotte Motor Speedway where their family and friends could be there to watch them. So... I wasn't expecting that, but it did kind of wash over me a little bit as they were doing the driver introductions. So, Tommy, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
I liked it last year at Bristol Motor Speedway. I thought that was awesome. Now that Martinsville has lights, why not do it there? I like the idea of them rotating the tracks. I was just actually going to say, too, that I actually missed it being at Charlotte, but just that was where it was at for years. And, I mean, one hot night, 1992, that's where it all started with Davey Allison and Kyle Petty. So, I mean, we should probably go back to that and keeping it the same way, but or NASCAR should. But, you know, it was just too much. I'm with you guys. It was just too much, all of that. I like the 10-lap segments because it was quick. But honestly, I felt like whoever started on the front row was who was going to win. That's what I was catching the gist of. And the Hendrick cars have been dominating. So I believe I picked Kyle Larson to win, and that's what happened. I mean, it's just they are on top right now. They are the top team, and I don't expect things to change. It's too bad that Chevy got it figured out this year because next year they're going to change the car. So maybe this is actually a good thing because it'll be more competitive. But because right now it's just competitive between the Chevys, in my opinion, really. And then you just sprinkle in, you know, Kyle Busch, Truex, and Denny Hamlin, and Joey, and Brad, and that's pretty much it. I mean, there are some other drivers knocking on the door to do wins, but, I mean, Chevys are dominating.
They certainly are. Jay, what's your follow-up on this one?
Well, first I'll start with here of what the chatter was between, and it looked like it was just between Mike and Andy. Let's see, where do I want to start? They expressed some... confusion with the format, and when they had the inverts, and then caution laps killed the first heat, and the full field invert there. Okay, here's where Mike started. He said, I think so. Still a crappy race. No challenge to the leader after the first lap or two off of a restart. And this is where he said they just need to bulldoze this place. Andy came back with 1,000,000, I don't know how many zeros are in that, agree. And said, short track, please. Okay, that was kind of where it ended there. The package thing comes into play, but that is one of those, again, for the first time at Texas, even though it's a mile and a half, not every mile and a half is the same. I disagree. I do understand the up front, starting up front seemed to be an advantage, but we saw some great restarts. and I'm not just in the All-Star race, but talking about the Xfinity and the trucks as well. But and then again, like I said, it was not a bumper-to-bumper, wheel-to-wheel battle at the end, but Chase Elliott was there, Joey Logano, and I can't think off the top of my head who the other one was coming, okay? So another lap or two, just the way it played out. And Tommy mentioned it. You know, right now, Kyle Larson and Hendrick Motorsports are on top of their game. You can't design a race to try and cripple a team that's doing what they needed to do. Two years back, they brought out the new Camaro. It wasn't right, and they struggled. You know, they went did their homework, got it right, and are now reaping the rewards of it. Why are you going to try and recreate a race just because of that, or, you know, this season? So that there again, I get frustrated with fans that want to jump on something like that because they were given the rules, they went to work at it, and they mastered it. I mean, why you want to punish them then for mastering it? That's what I don't understand. Far as the format, I liked some of the things they had in play with the five segments and then the 10-lap shootout. It did get to be a little much. I understand that some of the feeling on that. But I did like some of the things they threw in there, the fact that the fans are engaged. The fans got to pick the random color, which had a number behind it, and they changed it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked that. It wasn't, you know, and they mentioned this on the broadcast. The first year they did that, they said, okay, the fans get to vote whether you want none, six, or 12. Everybody knew it was going to be 12, so there wasn't really a surprise to it. Having the multiple different numbers in it be a random that the fans got to pick what color, but they didn't know what number was behind it, I thought went a lot better from that aspect. But I do understand where, especially if it was a casual fan or, you know, somebody new to the sport, that all the different rules and the inverts and that could have been a little confusing. From what I heard on some of the in-car radios, it was to some of the drivers and crew chiefs as well. So that maybe you found that limit of what is good and what is too much.
Yeah, I heard that too, that some of the drivers were even confused about what was going on. And we had the benefit of the broadcasters kind of updating us and keeping us informed. But the drivers had to rely on the spotter and the crew chief to kind of keep them informed of what was going on. There was a point that you made I wanted to piggyback on, and I can't remember what it was. I am not in favor of bulldozing the track. That, I don't think, needs to happen. But I do think that they need to make it a little bit. They don't need to have so many rounds and so many inverts. One, maybe three different rounds with one invert would be good. And I would like to see the last round be a little bit longer than what it was, because like you said, there were some drivers kind of coming up on them, and we didn't really get a chance to see that part of the race play out because it ended so quickly. But other than that, I guess I'm okay with it, but let's not bulldoze Texas Motor Speedway. Okay, Tommy, your final thoughts?
I don't know about bulldozing it either, but I think maybe they should just go there once a year, in my opinion. And nothing against the track. I don't know if I'm a mile and a half fan. I mean, some of them are entertaining, like Kansas for sure, Charlotte, like the Coca-Cola 600, Atlanta will have a good one every now and then, and Vegas. But overall, I just like super speedways and short tracks, and like Phoenix, and then some of the new road courses are really cool. But just don't know about Texas. I really don't miss Chicagoland either, but that's just me personally. Like I said, the mile and a halfers, the cookie cutters, whatever you want to call them. But I feel like it was just too much. I like the way the open was, the three stages and the fan vote. Maybe they should have just done three or four, like three stages and then the fourth for like the finale or something like that. And the inversions were cool, inverting a lot up and changing it up, but it really did just seem like whoever was on the front row was going to was going to win. So, at least, I mean, that's really what it looked like, just from watching it like that. But, yeah, Hendrick is dominating. It seems to be their only threats right now are really Kyle Busch and Joey Logano, in my opinion.
Okay. Never mind. I misread something there. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the next hot topic, Jay.
Oh, was that our second round already? I thought I got the reply to Tommy there.
Oh, okay. Did you have a reply for Tommy? Go ahead.
I most certainly do. The first couple times he's been on the show, from my opinion, I thought maybe he's a little timid and shy and not going to fit in with us as a group. But I got to applaud him because he jumped into a hornet's nest there, and I can't believe Sharon didn't respond to it of the not liking or not missing Chicago.
I know
Chicago
what you're talking about.
Yeah, see? I respect the opinion, but that of the mile and a half, that was most certainly, and Sharon and I were there when Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson went door-to-door and wheel-to-wheel and spun each other out, and neither one was mad because that was the racing people want to see. Going back to the... What's that? No, that was Chicagoland. Oh. Trust me, Sharon and I were there.
Oh, mm-hmm. That was a good race. That was, maybe I was mistaken, Chicagoland for Kansas. But either way, that was Kansas and Chicagoland do have some good races. But overall, just feel like the mile and a halfers are just sick. They don't really, I don't know. There's sometimes the restarts are good, and you know you do get good racing, but. Sometimes you just see cars dominate the whole day, like Ryan Blaney and Kyle Larson did at Vegas and Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the other thing that I liked about Chicagoland was that they had all four races. They had the ARCA, the Trucks and Xfinity with the Cup Series, and all four races were really good events. And all of them were really close races. I couldn't believe it when they decided not to race there anymore. So I for one, miss it. but I live in that area, so it's a little bit different for me, I guess, when it comes to that. But okay.
The final thing I wanted to say, Sharon, there with that with the bulldozing thing, I know you both were saying that that's not the answer, and I agree. And Ben, you brought up the old washing machine adage that a couple of weeks ago. Bring back an old saying: you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, yes, there could be some things done differently. I know that's why they use the PJ1. There are things that can be done. That track is still semi-aging, if you will. I know when they first repaved it, we went through that. It is still growing into what could become an Atlanta-style track. So you got to take that and give it its time to develop as well.
Okay, let's go ahead and go on to the next hot topic here. I've got a couple of barking dogs here.
All right, if you want to go into it, I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I've seen and heard good things about the SRX. If either one of you two got to watch it, I'd like to hear your opinions on it. My DVR didn't record it for some reason.
Okay, Tommy, go ahead.
I did watch the first heat race. Greg Biffle was dominating, and the cars looked awesome, I have to say that. And they really do look cool. They're colored up nice. They all look the same with that rear spoiler, and like I think they had gold tires. I don't know. They looked awesome. It was sold out. The fans were there cheering loud. I mean, the place was packed, and it was awesome to see the old heads, I guess you can call them now, going at it. Bobby Labonte, Tony Stewart, Bill Elliott, Michael Waltrip. I mean, Waltrip was up there running apparently in the second heat, which I didn't see. But and Greg Biffle, like I said, he was out there just dominating the whole time. I mean, he was tearing it up. And some of those other guys were up there, like the guy that just won the IndyCar 5 or the Indianapolis 500. He he was up there in like second or third, and so was Ernie Francis Jr. And he's really young apparently, but then apparently the hometown hero ended up winning it, which was pretty cool. So I don't know. I'm excited. I'm gonna have to catch the next one for sure.
Yeah, I missed it this time, but I really want to watch the next one, especially with all of their talk about how good the racing was. Yeah, I heard that it was all positive. I didn't hear any negative about it. And the next race is going to be at Knoxville on dirt, so I think that's going to be pretty exciting to watch as well. So, and they're racing this weekend at Knoxville on Saturday. So that's going to be a do not miss race for me. Jay?
Yeah, like I said, I'm not sure why my DVR didn't get it. And I was at my own local dirt track here. So I say I missed it. But it did sound pretty positive, even from Mike. I know he had some opinions on the broadcasting. Crew as it were, but you know, to me that's not what it's really about. It's one of those, my hope is the sustainability. You know, right now it's new, everybody's on board, we got six races this year. If they look to expand, or you know, how they move about it in the future of whether or not it's sustained and the fans stay supportive of it, that's always my issue. When it comes to that, is don't be fickle about it. If you're going to be behind it, be behind it. Go through the good and the bad. And I say that as a Cubs fan. You stay a Cubs fan even when they're losing, you're happy when they win. Well, this would be the same thing. You know, if there's something, a track they go to, kind of like the All-Star Race, that, you know, you want to see it, you want it to be a thing, so you can't tear it down when it doesn't go exactly the way you want. But everything I have heard so far has been positive. I'm with you. I got to make sure I get the next one recorded if I'm not able to watch it live, because I do really want to see it, and I do hope they succeed with it. And I know it's bringing something to CBS right now. I think Mike did have that up as one of the articles or hot topics of CBS isn't looking to get into NASCAR. This wasn't a test run for them to see. This is something unique, and I like that. If that's what they want to carry and that's where it is, it brings them something unique to bring their channel up as well. So, so far, all around, I'd have to say it was a pretty good deal.
It was awesome to see Alan Bestwick back in the booth. He sounded really good, in my opinion. I missed him from TNT, and Matt Yoakam, Danica Patrick was there. I didn't think she did that bad of a job. I thought she did pretty good with Alan Bestwick. And speaking of them going to Knoxville, I think Haley Deegan's going to be in it next week. So that's going to be interesting for sure. And Ken Schrader was there with Ray Evernham at the pre-race show. I did see that. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to the next race and the rest of the season.
Okay, sorry about that. My mute button was on. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that next race. I don't have a whole lot to add because I didn't really get to watch that race this week. So Jay, I'll let you have the final word on it.
Well, I will say this, that was one thing Mike was positive about. I'm not going to pull up his exact comments on this one, but my choice, seeing Matt Yoakam and Alan Bestwick back. He is not a fan of Danica Patrick, I'll put it that way. I don't know what she could have done better. And, again, I didn't see it, but he is not a fan of hers, I'll put it that way. Tommy said that he felt like she did pretty good. I know that I have my own opinion when it comes to her racing career, that maybe there was a little more hype than performance, but also I don't know that she was given the right opportunity and situation. So same thing applies here. You got to let them develop that as they go. And again, I don't watch a race to critique the announcers or the broadcast. I understand if there's something that's horribly wrong, I get that. And the right combo can certainly enhance it. But for me as a fan, it is about the racing. And like I said, from what I've heard and seen, that all went really well. So I like it and I'm behind it.
I'm going to bring up the next hot topic here because, Jay, you alluded to it a little bit, but I'm going to go ahead and bring it up as a hot topic separately, and that's about CBS. CBS, when they first brought on the SRX series, which is now the Camping World Truck, the Camping World SRX series, a lot of people thought maybe that was going to be opening the door for CBS to pick up NASCAR as well as IndyCar. Well, that was all put to rest this week. They said that they're not looking at IndyCar for next year, and they're not likely to be a player in NASCAR negotiations when its current TV deals with Fox Sports and NBC expire at the end of 2024. So I wanted to get your guys' thoughts about that because they've been on a lot of different networks, but CBS is kind of ruling themselves out. So, Jay, let's start with you since you brought that up.
Well, that would be one that, again, I don't know what they're looking for. I think they're missing an opportunity, but that's my opinion. You know, I did feel like this was maybe them testing the waters. And I know I saw that where they shut it down and said pretty much no to IndyCar and not really to NASCAR. But we've seen that with many other things. You decline it and deny it right up until it happens. So I still think it may be a possibility. It may not be next year per se, but I think that they are using it as whether or not racing is a platform they want to cover. And there again, I think that if they choose to go down that road, you get the right broadcast team and people together to make it happen. You know, I think back to when I first started watching racing with my dad. I mean, that was CBS was one of them that covered at least the Daytona 500 for a few years. I know ABC did. Okay, they've gone away from carrying it full-time, but that this might be their happy medium, if you will. Their fans or channelers wanting some racing. They're not going to go full-time with it, but they'll carry this. If that works for them, then so be it. You know, they got to make that decision and judgment on their own. But I do think they are missing the boat because I think that that it can be viable.
Tommy, what are your thoughts?
I was just going to say I thought I saw all over Twitter where it was kind of like where – CBS was like, we're not interested in IndyCar, and now they're saying that they are, and now ESPN was showing some interest, I saw, too, it looked like. So, I mean, it's, like Jay was saying, it's kind of like never say never because it might end up happening. They're just denying it, but then it might end up happening. So I just know that at the end of the year, I believe NBC Sports is no longer going to be doing it. So where are they going to go? I know there was discussions of USA. I was just going to say that I missed seeing it on TNT with, I believe it was Alan Bestwick and Wally Dallenbach and Benny Parsons and was it Dick Berger and the pit crew guy? I missed that. So maybe one day we'll get a throwback where somebody like ESPN does a race or TNT or something. But it is really just interesting to see how 1 week or a month ago they're not interested and now they are interested, CBS, NBC and all that stuff. So we'll see it play out.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think it's interesting that they kind of shut the door on it at this stage of it, because we know that NBC said that they're kind of backing away from it. From what they originally thought they were going to be doing. They're closing down NBC Sports Network. So that kind of surprises me more than anything. But something's going to happen at the end of 2024. We just don't know what it's going to be. So I agree with you guys. Just because they say no now doesn't mean it's no forever. And a lot of things can change between now and then. But we know that something's going to happen with regard to Fox or NBC especially. So We just got to give it the time to play out, I guess. But I think I would like for IndyCar to kind of find a home. Poor IndyCar seems to get kind of bounced around all over the place. So if they could find a home, I think that would be really great. So, Jay, what are your follow-up thoughts?
Yeah, it's one of those that, like you said, you're going to have to kind of wait and see it play out. I think that maybe, too, it is that they don't want to play their hand too early, if that is the case. I don't want to say they're going to try and lowball it then come time when they do decide to jump in, but, you know, business is business, and they're smart people involved in business. So, like I said, we've seen it before, and the most one that comes to my mind is Michael Jordan saying, yeah, I'm doing nothing with Denny Hamlin when it comes to racing, and lo and behold, here we are. So I don't always take that as a hard truth, even when those kind of statements come out. We'll see how it develops. And like I said, maybe they find their niche with this and just doing the 6-8 races or whatever, or doing it on occasion to bring it in. And if that's what works for them, more power to them. I think somewhere, some network is going to pick up and cover NASCAR, because like I said, I think it's a huge market and workable thing. But I'm not in the budget business or the bean counter business either.
Okay, Tommy, your follow-up?
I'm just interested to see how it plays all out, who the new commentators will be, who will be retired by then as a driver, and where will Junior go, if NBC Motorsports, if they don't, you know, if they don't go to NBC. So, yeah, we'll see how it works out.
Okay, yeah, that's an interesting point, too, because a lot of people have talked about how Jeff Gordon is taking on a bigger role at Hendrick Motorsports as well. So there could be some commentary change in that regard, depending on how much of a bigger role he's taking. We know eventually Rick Hendrick is going to retire. So, but as far as CBS goes, it's just a matter of time. These things have to be negotiated, and who knows, that could be kind of a tactic that they're using in their negotiations with NASCAR, who knows. But we'll have to just watch it play out and see what happens. I don't think anybody actually knows, to Jay's point about Michael Jordan. He adamantly denied it and then ended up being exactly what was happening. So time will tell the rest of the story, as they say. So, Tommy, you get the next talk topic.
Well, I don't know if y'all watch the Dale Jr. download and rear door bumper clear, but let's just go with some of his previous podcasts. I mean, he's had Kerry Earnhardt on, Ward Burton, and I think he's going to have Jimmy Spencer on tomorrow. He had Ty Norris on, I believe, from Trackhouse recently. But he's been getting a lot of reviews and views on his last few podcasts. Like, he's been in the top 5 and top 3 and getting really good reviews on his, like, last 3, which is Kerry, Ty, and Ward Burton. So just wonder if you guys have seen any of those and if you had any comments on them.
Okay, Jay.
I don't, believe it or not, I don't listen to the Dale Jr. podcast. I know that's going to put me on the list of bad people, if you will, but I don't have much to say on it because, like I said, I don't listen to it.
Okay, I actually have listened to a few of them when he had Kerry Earnhardt on and Larry McReynolds. I listened to that one. I want to go back and listen to the Ward Burton podcast. Because he does have a good technique for interviewing the drivers and everything that he does on that show. And I got to say this, our Jason Schultz, who used to be part of our Fan for Racing crew when we first got started several years ago, he is now one of the producers He actually went to school at University of Charlotte, North Carolina, University of North Carolina at Charlotte. And he now works with Dale Jr. on the podcast as kind of a behind-the-scenes director or producer or something. But he's doing a really good job. Occasionally they do show him in the background. So I think that's kind of cool, too, and that gives me reason to tune in to see Jason. So anyway, but, yeah, he does a really good job. I enjoy his interviews. The one with Carrie Earnhardt was really interesting. I love the stories that he pulls out of people when he does his interviews, and it's really good stuff. So, Tommy, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I don't really listen to the full episode. Sometimes I did catch a few of the full ones, like Mike Skinner. That one was interesting. But the Ward Burton highlights that I have seen were pretty good. They were pretty funny. I mean, he's, you know, his accent and everything. So it's really entertaining to hear him talk. And they were talking about the Bristol fight from like 2001 to in that area between them.
When he threw his helmet?
He threw something at him, and then in the interview said that if he would have had something else, he would have shot him, like, or something like that.
I remember that.
He was talking about his Daytona 500, too, and how the car was all cheated up on the podcast. Yeah, they openly talk about how the cars are rigged and how they won some of their races and everything. So, but Kerry and whenever he brings, like, Carrie or family on, they always bring in the family stories, and those are so entertaining. Like, apparently, according to one of the ones I heard, Kelly Earnhardt was the best one out of all of them, according to Dale, when it came to racing, that she had it, but since she was a woman, she didn't make it at the time that she tried to do it, and that's why she was so heavy on Danica and why she's so heavy on Haley Deegan. So, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, you learn a lot on the show, honestly, and he brings in, like, he's going to have old Jimmy Spencer tomorrow, so I know that one's going to get great reviews just automatically. I mean, Jimmy Spencer's a legend for talking trash and everything, so that'll definitely be a good one. And I did want to add on it, too. He did that I Am Athlete thing, and it was Brandon Marshall, Fred Taylor, and some other NFL players, though, Chad Ochocinco, or Chad Johnson, and that was really entertaining because he drove them all around the track after they all said, "Oh, you're not athletes. Y'all just drive in circles or whatever." And then they were all talking about how they couldn't handle the G-force coming off of the straightaway into turn four without getting lightheaded. And they were all like, "You do this?" And he's like, "Yeah, we did this 20 miles faster because that car couldn't go as fast." And then they do it in packs and for how many ever laps. And then they were like, "Yeah, y'all are a different kind of athlete for sure." But it was awesome. And then I think they interviewed Kyle Busch too. So it's awesome.
Okay, Jay, follow up.
I will say this. Like I said, it is not one that I listen to. That's what I love about NASCAR, especially when you're talking about, say, a driver or a team. You have that many options to go to. I do like what he does, and he does bring in a lot of a fan base, as well as you mentioned the crossover. When he started working for NBC, talked about him doing the Olympics. He went to the Super Bowl. It happened to be the one up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So, I mean, it's great that he's there and doing that. I didn't want it to seem like I was against Dale Jr., because I'm not. It's just not one of the ones I listen to. I'm in my vehicle a lot. I got Sirius XM. I listen to the several shows they have on throughout the day. I have my favorite there that I go to. So that I do love that there is so much content available. I know there's a couple others that do the podcast. There again, it's just not my thing of what I listen to. That or YouTube just isn't how I choose to intake. But that's what the great thing is all the different medias and hosts that you can go to, so you find where you fit or find what you want, and you can, because there is so much available, which, again, goes back to I don't understand why a television station wouldn't want to cover it, because it is. I mean, there's such a fan base.
Yeah, there really is. And Dale Jr., most popular driver in NASCAR for over a decade. So you know he's got a great following. Yeah, I just really enjoy the interviews when I have tuned in. And when I heard Ward Burton was on, I thought, oh, man, I've got to go back and listen to that one, because I would love to see them have Ward and Jeff Burton on there, because I think I heard kind of the same thing between them. They have a brother, Brian. I guess he never really had any interest in racing, but I think at one point I heard he was not that bad of a racer. He just didn't have any interest in it. He was actually pretty good. But I think it would be cool to have Ward and Jeff. One of the things that I've heard on occasion is that how did Jeff end up being so articulate when he speaks, and Ward talks, you know, when he talks, it sounds like he has marbles in his mouth. He's got that southern drawl. And they said because Ward lived on the south side of the house, and Jeff lived on the north side. So I thought that was kind of a funny response to that. But I do think that he has really good podcasts, and you're right, Jay. There's so much content out there right now that there's a lot of choices, and that's a really, really good thing. But the Dale Jr. download I think has some really great stories that come out. And I just like to kind of also, I guess having our podcast, I like to kind of listen to that and kind of see what his technique is a little bit as well. So, Tommy, we're going to give you the final say-so on this one.
The Ken Schrader one was another good one. That was the one that I think got me into him, listening to him and watching him. And Tony Stewart came on and discussed some of his interviews, you know, his post-race interviews, his temper tantrums, if you will. That was another good one. yeah, there's a bunch of good ones out there. And the Ty Norris one was really good. He talked about how he got kicked out, or the DEI spin, or the Michael Waltrip spin gate, or whatever that was, all that good stuff. So, I mean, he does have some good stuff. He had Ernie Swervin Irvinol earlier this year, I believe. I like how he brings those guys back in, because I remember a lot of those guys from my period of racing. I remember it was the most is from like 01 to 08, 07 probably. So I love seeing him bring in guys like Sterling Marlin, Jeff Burton, Bobby Labonte, Terry Labonte. It'd be cool to see Johnny Benson on there, you know, guys like that. But, yeah, I really enjoy it.
Even Ron Hornaday and some of those guys, yeah, I agree with you. And if anybody can get them, those are the guys that can make it happen. So, anyway, do we have time for one more topic, you guys think? Or should we do our roundtable?
Well, if you saw in the chat room there, I thought this might be a quick one to just kind of touch upon as far as Roger Penske being asked about his driver lineup for next year.
Okay, what did he say? Because I didn't see that.
They asked if Cindric was going to be in the 21 as it pertained to the Wood brothers, and then Brad Keselowski. And he made this statement of, I don't know. No, I should have shut it down here. Let me pull it back up real quick. I found it kind of leading, if you will, and that's why I wanted to know what you guys took from it. All right. It says, Roger Penske met with the media Friday, was asked again about Brad Keselowski's status with the team for next season. He also addressed the issue of the number 21 Wood Brothers driver. Austin Cindric was previously announced to be taking over the ride for Matt DiBenedetto. And when asked, will Cindric be in the 21 next year? He said, I don't know. And Brad Keselowski's statement is still, we have a contract for the rest of the season. anything he's going to do and we're going to do, we'll make that announcement properly at the right time. And then there was another one. Okay, here. Earlier in the day, Roger Penske was asked who would drive the number two next year. He says, we really haven't made a decision at this point. We've got a contract with Brad through the end of the year, and we'll make a decision when that's over. And then again, when it comes to the number two, there was something else that caught me off guard, and I was looking for it. But basically said, well, it's only June or July. Why are we asking about it now? When some of these announcements were already made, now some of it may have changed. So I think there's a lot to it, and I just wanted to see what you guys thought as far as if we're getting little information that's confirming what we already knew or think we know.
Okay, so Tommy, your thoughts.
My bold prediction is Cindric in the 2, Blaney in the 12, Logano in the 22, Benedetto in the 21. I think that's what's going to happen, and Brad's going to be in the 6 probably. But I don't know that's confirmed yet, but from what they were saying on Twitter a few months ago, it was all but confirmed that he was going to go to that 6 car. So that's how I think things will shape out, but time will tell.
Oh, okay. Exactly. Time will tell the rest of the story here again as well. But, yeah, he was very evasive in kind of answering any questions. But I thought it was interesting. Anything he's going to do or we're going to do, we'll make announcements properly at the right time. Will Cindric be in the 21? I don't know. Can DiBenedetto possibly return to the 21 next year? For me to discuss drivers, what is it, June or July? The season isn't even over yet. We haven't made any permanent decisions on drivers. There's a lot of moving parts. So, and same thing with Keselowski when he was asked. I can't talk about that, but I appreciate you asking when they asked if he's going to be back at Team Penske. You know, these guys can't talk about it. We've talked about this before. Sometimes one domino has to fall before the other dominoes can kind of fall into place. And that's what I think is the case here. I think they have to wait for all the dominoes to fall into place before they can make any announcements. And until then, they have to be as evasive as they are being with the media. But it's the media's job to ask these questions, too. So I guess we'll just give it time. I'm going to real quick make the announcement that we are going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. We will continue recording the rest of the show as part of the bonus overtime material. Probably won't be as long as it usually is because we had the one-hour segment tonight. But for any new listeners that are tuning in, just to let you know, we are going to go off the air, but the recording will be available on the podcast, and I will go out on Twitter to let everybody know when the podcast is available. All you have to do is fast forward to that two-hour mark in order to hear the rest of the conversation. So, Jay, what are your thoughts about those comments?
The comment, you read it. That's the one I was looking for, specifically when it came to the 21, saying, well, we're not going to comment about that. Right now it's only June or July. The season isn't over. That one was already announced. You know, it may be changing, which that's what my takeaway is. He is acknowledging that the change is going to be made. They don't know exactly what yet, or they're trying to finalize it. But I think we got confirmation. I feel that's a pretty solid confirmation because they went from the announcement that Cindric was going to be in the 21 and Matt DiBenedetto didn't have a ride to, well, we don't know, we can't talk about it right now, or we'll announce something when it's time to announce. Well, one of those you already did announce, you know, like I said. So it's going to be interesting, and I'm kind of torn, you know, with what Tommy put out there of Cindric just going to the number two in replace of Brad Keselowski, if that is how the dominoes fall, and Matt DiBenedetto staying in the 21. The two being the flagship of that team seems to be anyway, I'll say that. I know in recent years, Joey Logano in the 22 has kind of been the more dominant driver, but most recent championship winner for the team. Whether or not Matty D deserves to be the one to move into the number two, you know, we've seen several drivers, Ryan Blaney and then Matt DiBenedetto, move through the 21, as well as Paul Menard being in there until he chose to retire. So I'm kind of torn. I feel like Matt DiBenedetto ought to be given the opportunity to be the flagship driver with what he's shown. And I know they made some changes with the team this past weekend. Seems to have worked pretty well. But also, if he can stay with the 21, that's the team he's been building with, since Cindric is coming in as a new driver anyway, moving him into the number two. It's kind of a tough call, and I'm sure sponsorships and a lot of other things are going to come into play with that, as well as the Wood Brothers, because, again, that is technically a separate team. They have an alliance with Penske. So it's going to be interesting, but I do think, as Tommy put it, I feel those are going to be the four drivers with Penske. Joey Logano, I don't see moving out of the 22, nor Ryan Blaney out of the 12. To me, it is the 2 and the 21 are the factors. And now DiBenedetto possibly being able to stay at Penske, which we didn't think he was before. But I do think those are going to be the four drivers. But it is still possible that they may pull something else out and you see another driver come out of nowhere that we didn't know about or even see coming. Maybe Kurt Busch. We keep throwing his butt in the air. Maybe he ends up back at a Penske Ford.
Okay, Tommy, your follow-up?
They can move Joey from the 22 to the 2 and put Cindric in the 22 and then keep Matty D in that 21. But maybe they will put Cindric in the 21 and promote Matty D to the 22 or the 2. That would be good for Matty D. But I feel like Austin Cindric might be their future, so we'll not go ahead and put him in the 22 also or the 2 right off the bat and let him. I mean, it would be cool to actually see the 2 have a rookie. I feel like I haven't seen a rookie 2 in a long time. Has there ever been a driver to strobe the 2 car been a rookie? Because I don't think Rusty Wallace was. I think his replacement was Kurt Busch. So, and then who was next after that? Brad, I guess. So, I mean, maybe it's time to get a rookie in that number.
Okay. It is going to be interesting. There's a lot of up-and-coming drivers coming up through the ranks, if you will. And like he said, there's a lot of moving parts, and that's what makes this so tricky, is that, you know, one thing changes. You might have a plan in place, and then something changes, and all of a sudden now you've got all those dominoes to play with again. And you've got to try to figure out how you're going to fill in the spots. So it is going to be interesting. And to the point that Jay made about, you know, you already announced it. It was a one-year deal with Matt DiBenedetto in that 21 car. So that could be not the case now. We may find out that that's going to be different too. So with all these moving parts, so I guess we just have to let time take its course. And as soon as that first domino drops, though, I guarantee you all the others will start to fall into place as well. And, you know, there's some other, if you look at the page here, they mentioned a lot of people saying, Brad Keselowski and Roger Penske both saying, when I can talk about it, I will. But they're not in a place where they can talk about what's going on yet. So we just have to wait until that time comes. Jay, your final thoughts?
Yeah, one of the things I look at of, again, it was announced that Cindric was going to the 21 of the Wood Brothers. Now that Penske may want Cindric into the number two, if they had agreed for that to say, and I'm just throwing a number out there, a 2 or a 3 year deal with him in the 21, now they want to put him in the number two. Okay, where does that leave the Wood Brothers? They say, hey, we announced this, you know, he's our driver now. That may be some negotiation. Hey, we'll give you better or more support than we have as far as the alliance. Or, you know, so that's what I think is happening now is, you know, that announcement was made. They're trying to renegotiate it. possibly. You know, and I don't know how the Wood Brothers team itself feels about keeping Matt DiBenedetto. Like I said, I know right now they kind of went through, a slump. I don't know if I'd call it a full bore slump, but they weren't running as good as they were. And you certainly have to think about that, of whether or not they were preparing to move forward with Cindric at least for a year or two, as they thought. So the other one that kind of came to my mind that, and I hate to say this because I want to see DiBenedetto stay within that organization because I think he was building something. They just hit a bump in the road. But, again, one that is possibly on the outside looking in is Ryan Newman. And you think about the old-school racer that Ryan Newman is and the old-school team that the Wood Brothers is. I mean, what kind of fit would that be?
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting scenario. Ryan, one of two things, that either he's going to be retiring or he's going to go somewhere else. So, again, we don't know what the case is, but an interesting scenario there. Okay. Tommy, you got anything else?
Hey, real quick there, Sharon, if I can jump in.
Yeah, sure.
Mike just put under that, being that I'd put it on the board, Mike put on here, it says, interesting, he doesn't even throw out the, we're still working with Brad and hopefully can get a contract like they used last year. I'd say it's got to be a done deal. And then he said, I wonder what's holding up the announcement at this point.
Okay.
And that's kind of what I was alluding to is I feel like Roger Penske is saying we're having to move on and shuffle things up now because we know what's coming from Brad's side, but they won't say yet because, like I said, he said the other moving parts now.
Yeah, and that's the key line for me, is there all the moving parts. And that's because I think that one thing has changed, and it's kind of changed what happens elsewhere as well. So we'll see what happens. Tommy?
I think it'd be pretty cool to see Newman in the 21 car, if that was to happen, but I don't want to see him retire yet either. I want to see him continue to race. He's one of the old heads because he's been, I feel like he drove that 02 car Alltel in like 2000, 2001, if I remember. So I still want him to be out there. Him and Harvick and Kurt Busch, don't retire. Keep on going.
Yeah, Harvick raced with Team Penske for a while. Okay, did you have any new topics, Tommy?
I don't have any off the top of my head right now.
Okay, Jay?
No, that one pretty much tapped me out, and I know we did go into the overtime for tonight, so I think we're good for tonight.
Okay, that'll be great. Okay, so let's go ahead and start our roundtable. Tommy, we'll start off with you for that.
At NASCAR fan since 95, not really currently working on anything right now, but give me a follow. I'd much appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Jay.
You can follow me on Michael Hoosman on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And I know I got some downtime tomorrow to try and finish up the Michael McDowell article and get that to Sharon so that can come out this week. I kind of thought about whether or not to hold off, being that if we see if he makes the playoffs, but I think he is pretty much, I don't want to say guaranteed, that's a tough word to use, but should at least be into the playoffs here as we're running out of races now to get multiple winners that might push him out. As we have discussed early in the year, I don't think that's the probability anymore because that means Kyle Larson has to quit winning races, and I don't see that happening. So I will work very hard on that tomorrow and see if I can't get that to you, Sharon, by hopefully before Thursday, before we do the preview show on Thursday.
Okay. Fan for Racing site on Twitter and Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including our website, fanforracing.com. And I know we didn't get Sam's recap up. He had some personal things come up that prevented him from doing that this week. Hopefully he'll be back with a recap for next week. So just an FYI there. And, yes, we're looking forward to doing the show on Thursday night, and that will be the preview. All three series are racing at Nashville this week, so that's going to be a fun one to do. In addition, the SRX is racing at Knoxville, and we've got the IndyCar racing at Road America. So just to keep everybody up to date on all the races going on this coming weekend. A big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate each and every one of you. We're happy to have you here and hope you'll come back for Thursday night's show and throughout the season. And a shout out to our Fame for Racing crew. Again, we appreciate Tommy being on standby for us every week. Because a lot of times I don't know until the last minute whether or not people are going to be on the show, especially for Hot Topics. So Tommy and Owen are usually our standby guys for those nights. But we appreciate you guys being flexible and being a part of our team. So thank you for that. And Jay, you co-hosted last Monday night. We had Sal back this Monday night. He's been doing a whole lot of back and forth with work, and so we really appreciate you for stepping up in those cases as well. So, and I'm looking forward to the Thursday night show. So with that, I think we'll call it a night.
All right. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Okay. Take care, everybody.